Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, December 2nd, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The long-awaited ZANU-PF Congress opens with a Politburo meeting in Harare today, but as President Robert Mugabe chaired the meeting, some unknown people were distributing anti-Mugabe flyers in the city.
We want to wait and see what happens, but obviously it's one of those undemocratic processes where the vice president of the country can be threatened.
President Robert Mugabe takes a swipe at her beleaguered deputy Joyce Mujuru, accusing her of being, quote, too simplistic to lead the country.
First of all, they should clearly relook at their current domestic legislation to do with indigenization and other domestic legislation that is in investment at the moment. The second thing is I think they should spend more time focusing on that, thinking around how to resolve the economy.
And analysts say besides the alleged coup plot by Mrs. Mujuru and her allies, Mr. Mugabe is facing a more serious threat that he cannot eliminate by political retribution, the crumbling economy.
The long-awaited ZANU-PF Congress opened in Harare today with President Robert Mugabe chairing the party's Politburo meeting, which is expected to set the agenda for the week-long meeting. But while Mr. Mugabe was consolidating his power base, presiding over a meeting recommending he be given more powers to run the party, unidentified people were driving around the city in a vehicle marked ZANU-PF Marondera, littering the city with anti-Mugabe flyers. Ivan Jifera has more from Harare.
Witnesses told Studio 7 that five people in the ZANU-PF vehicle threw the flyers inscribed "Vote of No Confidence Mugabe" as they drove around several streets in the city. Most people were, however, afraid to pick up the flyers. Harare resident Gilbert Kagodora tells Studio 7 he saw people in the truck dropping the flyers at the corner of Jason Moyo and First Street.
Or a clearly marked ZANU-PF truck from Marginal and East drove to First Street and Jason Moyo, and it parked, and there were three people in the cab, and two were in the truck outside, and they dropped some flyers that were written "Vote of No Confidence on Mugabe."
Another resident who declined to be named said the flyers were of poor quality and were unlikely to have been printed by ZANU-PF, but were being distributed by some disgruntled supporters. Studio 7 was unable to get comment from senior ZANU-PF leadership from Mashonaland East or acting spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo. But media center director and political analyst Ernest Mudzengi says given the infighting in ZANU-PF, it is possible that the distribution of the flyers was done by one of the factions.
It's difficult to tell. It could be that the other faction aligned to Vice President Joyce Mujuru is doing that out of anger. That is still possible. The other explanation could be that it's a part of counterintelligence by the other faction loyal to Mr. Mnangagwa. It's possible both ways. We cannot tell.
He said it is unlikely that anyone in ZANU-PF would ever propose a vote of no confidence in President Robert Mugabe, especially with all the purges that have been going on in the past month and that have seen senior ZANU-PF members like Deputy President Joyce Mujuru being dumped from the powerful decision-making organ, the Central Committee. ZANU-PF has been rocked by serious infighting, pitting factions allegedly led by Ms. Mujuru and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa. Meanwhile, hundreds of ZANU-PF members who failed to get accredited in their provinces for the Congress were camped outside the party's headquarters, hoping to get their tickets into the venue. President Mugabe is expected to officially open the Congress Thursday. Ms. Mombiarara is one of those who have been accredited. She says they expect a peaceful and successful Congress.
I wish the Congress will be held very nice, and I think we are going to learn more things from our president and the members of the Politburo and the members of the Central Committee, the members of the Harare province, and many provinces are going to come here so we get together.
Meanwhile, the First Lady, Grace Mugabe, today toured the Congress venue, which has been named the Robert Mugabe Square. More than 12,000 delegates are expected to attend the Congress, which many say will now be a damp squib following the purging of the party and efforts to centralize power in Mr. Mugabe so he can choose his own deputies, unlike in the past when they were elected. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thank you, Ivan. Meanwhile, President Robert Mugabe today took a swipe at his beleaguered deputy, Joyce Mujuru, accusing her of being, quote, too simplistic to lead the country and that she had grown big-headed. Mr. Mugabe made the remarks after apparently being egged by Mrs. Mujuru's second, North Shore, at the party's crucial Politburo meeting in Harare. The meeting marked the beginning of the party's Congress. Mrs. Mujuru and one of her allies, Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa, are said to have skipped the meeting. Mr. Mugabe told party members and the media before the beginning of the meeting that Mrs. Mujuru did not support the call for elections last year, controversially won by the ruling ZANU-PF party. At the time, ZANU-PF was in a coalition government with the opposition MDC, with Morgan Tsvangirai as prime minister. And as tensions ran high in the ruling ZANU-PF party, the police anti-riot unit was said to have been put on high alert.
Harare Youth ZANU-PF Chairman Godwin Gomwe, who's allegedly aligned to a faction led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa and currently enjoying favor with Mr. Mugabe, told Studio 7 that they will physically remove Vice President Mujuru from the VIP table should she choose to attend the Congress. Mrs. Mujuru and her allies are being accused by the rival Mnangagwa faction of attempting to assassinate President Mugabe, resulting in the purging of her allies. Most of them will now not attend the Congress. The coup plot claims against Mr. Mugabe have remained unsubstantiated, and police have not arrested the alleged coup plotters. But ousted former war veterans Chief Jabulani Subanda was the only one arrested and was freed on bail today. He was charged with undermining the authority of the president when he commented that there had been a bedroom coup in the country following scathing attacks by Mrs. Grace Mugabe on the vice president. The party central committee will meet tomorrow to complete the purging of Mrs. Mujuru's allies when it forced to give Mr. Mugabe powers to appoint his deputies and party chairmen. The party conflict is also now drawing in the securocrats.
Gomwe accuses some senior police officials of being sympathetic to Mrs. Mujuru, resulting in them failing to arrest her and her allies. But the police and the Attorney General insist that no one has registered a complaint against the alleged coup plotters. Those aligned to Mrs. Mujuru fear that her security at the Congress is not guaranteed. Her vocal backer, ousted party spokesman Rugare Gumbo, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the decision to attend or boycott the Congress rests with Mrs. Mujuru herself.
Well, it's not up to me to advise her one way or the other. It is up to her.
But there are all these threats against her and her backers, and there are even some who are threatening to physically remove her from the VIP stand should she attend. And the president is conspicuous by his failure to comment on the developments. Is she safe?
Well, I would say she's safe or not, but... it's up to the party, it's up to the leadership, it's up to President Mugabe to decide what he wants to do with her, whether he wants her to be threatened and pushed out, as people say, it's up to him. Well, we want to wait and see what happens. But obviously, it's one of those undemocratic processes where the vice president of the country can be threatened by youth and raided crowds. It's one of those tragic things that have fallen in Zimbabwe. But look, that is the situation existing today in Zimbabwe.
Addressing war veterans today, President Mugabe described Amai Mujuru as too simplistic to lead because she did not attend the Politburo meeting. Are you surprised by these comments?
Oh, I'm not surprised. I mean, this is the first time that those statements have been made. I wasn't aware that he addressed war veterans today. But whatever he said, he's the leader of the party. He's the president of the country. So it's not up to me to comment one way or the other.
There's this talk that there was a plot to assassinate Mr. Mugabe. What is your take on this?
Well, I've never been involved in any plot to undermine the authority of the president, to undermine the party.
That was ousted ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Gweru, the Midlands province.
Also looking on as events unfold in ZANU-PF are many American officials. Johnny Carson, a former United States ambassador to Zimbabwe, says that President Robert Mugabe has been consistent in his control of ZANU-PF over the years. He says he's not puzzled by the unfolding events in ZANU-PF and Zimbabwe in general.
As I've said over and over again, when leaders remain in power for decades, 10, 20, and 30 years, the state becomes more corrupt, human rights violations increase, the tolerance of the opposition declines, the media becomes increasingly pressured and constrained, and you see a situation where leaders don't listen to their people, but they listen to their inner circles, and these inner circles get smaller and smaller and smaller. And when transitions effectively come, these transitions are full of tension, conflict, and sometimes violence. But the longer leaders stay in power, the more corrupt the regime and the state becomes, the more insular they become, the less respect for the opposition, for civil society, and human rights.
That was Ambassador Johnny Carson, a former ambassador of the United States in Zimbabwe. Please tune in tomorrow for a longer version of the interview with Ambassador Carson on what he thinks about the current situation in Zimbabwe.
And besides the alleged coup plot by Mujuru and her allies, Mr. Mugabe is facing a more serious threat that he cannot eliminate by political retribution, that is, the crumbling economy. Despite its ambitious election promise last year, the ZANU-PF government has struggled to get it right on the troubled economy. Officials have arguably expended much of their time dabbling in factional party politics. And with the ZANU-PF succession question expected to be somewhat resolved at the party congress this week, Studio 7 asks, can the ZANU-PF finally focus on the economy? Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo posed that question to economic commentator Masimba Kuchera.
Well, I'm not optimistic that there will be an immediate solution to the economic problems or to the economic mismanagement. There are going to be further reshuffles at cabinet level or even at institution level. This is what the state media is telling us. Therefore, it's clear that they are going to take more time than the Congress to rebuild their house or put it in order. And as long as they take that kind of time, that amount of time, the economy will continue in reverse mode. Let us remember that from 3-4 months ago, we have been seeing insults, we have been seeing all sorts of name-calling and scaremongering that has been going on within the party. Even rumor mongering, sometimes even outright lies being told by those who are there, who are bent on soiling other people's names. So a lot of mudslinging has been going on, and I don't think it will end with the end of Congress. I don't think Congress will be the omega of the name-calling and mudslinging that we've been seeing.
What is it that the ZANU-PF government should do to address the issue of the economy?
Look, I think they should refocus. First of all, they should clearly relook at their current domestic legislation to do with indigenization and other domestic legislation that is in investment at the moment. The second thing is I think they should spend more time focusing on it, thinking around how to resolve the economy, how they can consult the general Zimbabwe populace, and how they can attract investment.
And that was economic commentator Masimba Kuchera on the line with Studio 7 reporter Ntungamili Nkomo in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up,
Zimbabwean women continue to observe the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has announced the replacement of his interior minister and police chief hours after a militant attack that left 36 people dead. President Kenyatta announced Tuesday he's replacing interior minister Joseph Ole Lunkwe and has accepted a retirement request from police chief David Kimayo.
The Ebola epidemic is having a stark economic impact on Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, and is cutting economic growth even more sharply than experts estimated last month. A study released today by the World Bank notes that all three nations were growing strongly before the Ebola crisis, but Liberia is now likely to grow at an annual rate of just 2.2%. Sierra Leone's economy is predicted to expand by 4%.
And the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder says he will unveil guidance to end racial profiling in response to the recent shooting death of an unarmed black teenager by a white policeman in the central U.S. city of Ferguson, Missouri.
Unknown men today abducted journalist cum activist Itai Zamara and his colleagues from the Occupy Africa Unity Square group as they marched along Kwame Nkrumah Avenue in Harare. They were severely assaulted and dumped after hours of being reported missing. They have now been admitted at the Avenue's clinic. Eyewitness and Occupy Africa Unity Square group Secretary General Charles Nyoni says Zamara, together with Tafazwa Charumbira, Jerry Mugweni and others named as Alan and Bothwell, were pushed into three speeding cars that included a white Toyota Corolla during the abduction. Nyoni suspects the abductors to be part of the notorious ZANU-PF youth group Chipangano. He says he managed to identify one of them to be a member of the Mbari group.
Last month, Zamara and his lawyer, Kennedy Masiwa, were brutalized by the riot police who descended on them in Africa Unity Square. In October, a group of ZANU-PF youths also attacked Zamara and his colleagues. Nyoni speaks with reporter Jonga Kandemiri about Zamara, who's protesting against Robert Mugabe's continued stay in office.
Yes, Mr. Zamara and his colleagues, we found them at 10 after 6, where they were dumped by the guys who abducted them at Central Police Station.
Did they manage to explain what happened to them after being abducted?
According to them, they said they were taken by the guys to a ZANU-PF office that is situated at Fort Bus Terminus. There they were severely attacked to the extent one of them can't even put on his shoes nor walk. We have had to get him slippers. And the other guy's left ear is severely damaged and bleeding. The doctor right now, as I speak, is undergoing to take some scans to see how far the damage was done to the left ear.
Did these guys place any charges against them?
No, they did not place any charges. Only what they did was to take them, beat them, then dump them at the police station at the CID department. There, that's where we found them. And we made a report to the police that these guys have just been beaten for nothing. And as usual, the police just listen to us and they do nothing. And we've also gone to see the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights to take up the case with them and file issues against these guys.
That was Occupy Africa Unity Square Group Secretary General Charles Nyoni in Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Sasa Project, a women's rights group, says it has set up one-stop shops in Harare and other provinces to provide abused women with services, including safe houses where they can temporarily stay while their cases are being processed. Msasa Project Director Neti Msanu says the number of women visiting their one-stop centers, especially in Harare, has risen in the past few months, largely due to the economic crisis facing the country. Msanu says this year, the organization will also work with women in the rural areas during the 16 days of activism targeting violence against women. The campaign started last month and will end next week on December the 10th.
Since we launched our one-stop center in January, we have seen a huge increase in the numbers of women that are coming to our center. For example, per month we are receiving cases averaging 1,000 per month, and sometimes it goes up to about 1.4, 1.5. The problem we are having right now in our country is because of the socio-economic problems. There is a lot of tension within the home, and therefore people are fighting over the meagre resources that people have. A lot of men are not employed. People are surviving on vending, and that has created a lot of tensions within the home. But we've also seen an upsurge of rape and sexual violence against women and girls, and in particular against girls. And in our shelters across the country, the majority of those that are in our shelter are young girls that have been raped and are carrying pregnancies. And people are looking for quick riches, and some are told that if they sleep with a virgin, there will be exercise of their HIV, for example, or they'll get a lot of money. So we are also seeing a lot of cases of rape and sexual violence against women and girls.
Also, like you mentioned, most women fear reporting their abusers, especially if they're their husbands, that they will be locked up. What are the other options that they can take?
The reason why a lot of women will not report is because a lot of the perpetrators are the breadwinners. In some cases, it is rape. A lot of that, again, is happening within the home, within the family. It's a person that they know. It's a relative. It's a person that they are close to. A lot of times, women will tell you that if I report, where do I go to? Let me tell women that organizations like Musasa are operating shelters, safe homes, safe shelters for survivors of gender-based violence. So if you feel aggrieved, if you feel you've been violated, you have a right to report, and you can seek for shelter while you are following up your case.
That was the director of Msasa Project, Neti Msanu, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyawe from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Migrant Association says it has reached out to the South African Home Affairs Office following reports that some Zimbabweans are being forced to pay fines for travelling with their Zimbabwean special permits application receipts. The travellers, who were following a reprieve issued by South African Home Affairs Minister Melusi Gigaba, allowing Zimbabweans who have applied to return home for the holiday season, say they were stopped by South African police and asked to pay nearly 500 rands in fines. Under the reprieve issued by Mr. Gigama, Zimbabweans who have successfully applied for their ZSP extension can enter and exit the country using their receipts. Applications close on December 31st. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Zimbabwe Migrants Association Communications Director Daniel Muzenda, who says they will continue monitoring any reports by Zimbabwean permit holders.
We got reports as early as 2 a.m. today that some people are being made to pay as much as 500 rands for fines of overstay. Yet the minister gave a reprieve that all the permits are expiring as at the 31st of December. And this is really a cause for concern for all Zimbabweans who are traveling. Even if you show the police the receipts, they are still being forced to pay the 500 rand.
Were you able to assist anyone who was in this compromising situation?
Yes, we have sent an email to the Minister of Home Affairs today raising the issues so that they can relay the message to the police that people have to travel freely without being harassed along the way.
And what's your advice to those who are traveling who find themselves in this issue? What should they do?
They have to phone us so that at least we communicate with the Minister of Home Affairs and with the police on the ground to tell them that those people were given a reprieve by the minister to travel for the holidays as long as they have got the proof of their receipts that they are still waiting for their permits to be issued.
That was Zimbabwe Migrants Association Communications Director Daniel Muzenda.
As a reminder to you all to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Blessing and Gibbs will discuss with you and the experts about developments at the ongoing ZANU-PF Congress.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Well, Chris, it's that time of the day when we, you know, jump into our mailbag. The first email today.
Yes, Sandy, we have a long email and it's quite moving because it says here, actually it's from Joe Levison, who says, "Hello, I have a blood brother named Davison Joe who embarked on a journey from Cape to Cairo on foot in order to raise money which he promised to use for helping the needy. He started the journey in 1997 and the news about him was covered in the Masungo Stars paper, but I've forgotten the date for the paper. Currently, no news about him is covered. His whereabouts are not known by either of my relatives. Help me, please."
So those who can help Mr. Joe Levison, please do write to him or text him on 071-761-4227. The number once again, 071-671-4227. I suspect this is a South African number. And the next one, Chris?
The next one is from Wawachi, who is in Pretoria, again in South Africa. And he says, "What is going to happen in the troubled ruling party? No one knows. The new party of power-hungry guys is a desperate attempt of the Ncube guys who performed poorly in the last elections. I'm sorry to say the truth, there's no way this party is going because we will never ever vote for poor politicians like these guys. Forget it."
And then we also have another one from Adam Madobo in Kariba, Zimbabwe. "Thanks for giving us genuine news," he says, "without taking sides with the parties in the country."
And this one is nice and short and to the point, and it's from Pido Mudzengerere, who says, "How are you all, Studio 7 team?"
And another one says, "Hi, guys. Thank you for the good work that you are doing. May Jah bless you all of you guys in the U.S. and all of you in Zimbabwe. Please say hi to all Zim Dancehall artists. Me say big up Fox, Jasper, Sozi, and Binguzas in Bikita. Yours, Gerald Binguza, Binman. Big up all Rastas. One love."
And the last one is from Jota Machope, also from South Africa, and he writes, "I want to send my lovely greetings to you all, Studio 7 Patriots. You are doing a great job to lighten up Zimbabwe. Let the truth come front and everyone will know the way to follow. I want to say hi to all people who know me." And that's Jota Machope.
Thank you so much, and keep them rolling in, Chris. The time is not on our side. Now we recap today's top stories.
The long-awaited ZANU-PF Congress opens with a Politburo meeting in Harare today, but as President Robert Mugabe chaired the meeting, some unknown people were distributing anti-Mugabe flyers in the city.
And President Robert Mugabe takes a swipe at a beleaguered deputy Joyce Mujuru, accusing Ye of being caught too simplistic to lead the country and growing too big-headed.
That's our broadcaster this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 News in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.